All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Welcome. Me and John have been off for maybe 2, maybe 3 weeks. In the midst of all this lovely hot weather we've been having here in the UK, I seem to have caught a cold. How is that possible? Anyway, John, this week we'll be discussing... excuse me, because I've got some stats for John's subject. We'll be discussing the Syria crisis, or the Syria war. Now, Trax FM have been, this has been ongoing. Judge Jim's big debate, soon to make a comeback, don't worry, did reiterate this grave situation. I think we were, one of the shows we did when we were on here, David Cameron got a vote in the House of Commons. As he got that vote, planes were in mid-air, UK fighter jets to bomb Syria. John wants to elaborate more on that. John, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Hello, listeners. Nice to be back with you live for the first time in a while. Just to prompt this later on, I've got a couple of updates on some stuff relating to previous shows we've done the last couple of weeks, but we will go straight in to talking about Syria, and particular about the, not the Syrian conflict in total, as there are plenty of other writers and broadcasters who can do that better than me. But it's not about the Syrian civil war this week. This is about specific involvement of outside governments and their interventions via bombing. We will also not tonight be touching upon the issue of Kurdish conflict with ISIS and now once again with Turkey in Afrin, nor the Democratic Federation of Northern Syria in Rojava, because this is another show. It's a huge subject, and I am hoping to get in contact with some people from the Kurdish community in this country to talk about that in a little more detail. We're going to begin by talking about the bombing raid in the early hours of the 15th of April this year. The US, with support from Britain and France, launched about 100 missiles on sites allegedly relating to government chemical weapon manufacture. Casualty numbers were slow coming out, but we do know a suburb outside Damascus was hit, and also a lot of buildings of one type or another, although it seems that there was little information about what, if anything, was actually inside these buildings. There were many reports that no chemical weapons dumps or manufacturing centres were hit at all. Civilian casualties are, as ever, very common. This incident left us with some important questions nationally. What is the aim of these airstrikes? And was that aim achieved? Is Britain interested in regime change in Syria? And if so, change to what? Unfortunately for the show and the wider culture, we still have no real answer to these questions, at least beyond soundbites. These types of strikes are really just shows of strength against countries, no matter how evil their leaders might be, who the West want to keep in line. The same thing was done to Iraq for years, especially in the 1990s. Now, we do need to have a quick look at the sides, if you will, in this conflict. We'll start with the government. Led by grade-A scumbag Bashar al-Assad, iron-fisted in his treatment of any political dissent for all his career and practitioner of war crimes in his country since the uprising of 2011, if not before. This has included bombardment of rebel-held and disobedient areas of the country, starvation of other acts of systematic cruelty, while throughout his presidency he has operated a secret police force accused of torture, imprisoning and murder of political opponents. His torture chambers have also been used on victims of rendition from the West, back when we liked him. Assad is an Alawite, a type of Shia Islam, and we will talk more about this in a moment. I now want to talk about the Free Syrian Army, possibly the worst reported on group in modern war. This is a very wide umbrella taking a variety of factions, and many of them just as extreme, or even more so, than the government. While officially fighting the army and trying to overthrow Assad, what is often not mentioned is how many extremists and killers are within the fractured ranks. None of this stopped them from gaining support from the US government, among other foreign interveners. In 2012, the FSA had quite a moment and took a few cities with US aid, financially and with arms, but there has never been a coherent Free Syrian Army, and the moderates are mostly a myth. There was an estimate by the CIA at one time that 1,200 different militias existed under the FSA banner, and getting them all to do something was pretty much impossible. Notice there is also little talk, as I mentioned earlier, of Rojava. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, everyone. I apologise. But as I say, we'll talk about that later on. Now, I want to turn to the work of a man named the War Nerd, also known as John Dolan to his mates. and he appeared on the episode of the often mentioned on this show podcast Chapo Trap House and discussed with the hosts, all of whom are well informed on this issue, all about what's going on. Dolan pointed out how Alawites, among others, are under threat from factions of the FSA. Zian Alouche, pardon me for the pronunciation, who was one of the well-known FSA or associated FSA leaders who's been killed in some attack or another by now, but he mentioned having a sort of Islamic State if they succeeded in overthrowing Assad, and when talking about Shia and Christians said he wanted to cleanse the country of Alawites. They further discussed the nasty history of America's actions in the region and how Russia came in to protect their client state in 2014 after Daesh came in from Iraq. Rebel group Jaish al-Islam are accused of using chemical weapons, chlorine in particular, attacks too. So we do not have the simplistic idea that's been put out to us as we understand this. By the way, I might as well say at this point, before anyone jumps in online, I'm not taking any sides here. We'll come to that later. I'll talk about that later on. Online is full of people taking each side and even inventing a few of their own to defend or denounce. Anyone speaking against the FSA is accused of being an apologist or supporter of Assad, while supporters of the FSA are accused of being terrorists. One example of this involves the journalist Robert Fisk and his coverage of the conflict. Now, anyone who knows Fisk's work would be surprised, to say the least, at accusations he would support a tyrant like Assad. Fisk is a proper journalist who researches his stories scrupulously and, along with Patrick Coburn, was writing easily the best stuff during the Iraq War. His Middle East reporting career stretches back to the Iranian Revolution and the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. He has often stated his position on war, which he calls, quote, the complete failure of the human spirit, and what journalism should do, which is to hold those in power to account. Fisk recognises that many differences in the Syrian population and how these all cross over, including the class and ethnic divisions. Nevertheless, when reporting on the Syrian conflict, Fisk has been accused of partisanship with the government. In International Business Times, Sam Hamad, in 2016, accused Fisk of always siding with Assad and, quote, Russian propaganda. Hamad took exception to Fisk's reporting of the rebel victory over Aleppo, while also admitting the FSA forces committed a few atrocities. He feels Fisk's views are of there being no good guys in the conflict is wrong, claiming that the vast majority of rebels are overwhelmingly locals fighting to protect their communities from Assad, Iranian and Russian brutality, and many foreigners are fighting for them. Again, we see a political division already worked out in the wider arenas, that's that of Syrian government and their support versus those against, which includes the US, the UK and Israel and the wider NATO family. While reading the article that Hamad has such problems with, Fisk is very clear, I think, in his condemnation of war and how detailed this conflict is. Also pointing out what makes many so uncomfortable, which is the lack of real differences in the two or more sides that are actually involved in this conflict. Hamad, meanwhile, has a very clear view that the rebels are the liberators, at the time of writing at least. I haven't found anything he's written beyond 2016. But at the time of writing, that the rebels are the liberators of Aleppo and fighting mostly foreign forces, as he puts it, on the government's side. Looking at his other articles, he clearly wants intervention in Syria against the government and has jumped on the anti-Jeremy Corbyn wagon and the anti-stop the war bandwagon and accuses the rest of us of being no better than Nazi appeasers for ignoring Assad's genocide in Aleppo. Quick note to Mr. Hamad, I've never ignored genocide. I just don't agree with you on this particular issue. The real crime Fisk has committed is questioning the status quo of how the war in Syria is seen. He has raised questions regarding if it even is a chemical attack that took place at this particular time. And this was on the Australian broadcaster Spirit Radio. You can find his interview on YouTube where he talks about talking to people on that were actually on the ground at the time. This particular attack was the basis for the Western Forces attack that we are discussing tonight. So I do think it's fairly important to the bombing raid I mentioned from the 15th of April. I suggest you read everything Robert Fisk writes, and you can find him at The Independent, also some good stuff on YouTube. The particular article where he condemns the FSA in Aleppo was on the 4th of August and 16. But this disagreement is only one example of the masses of political baggage that are brought to this conflict by so many people that makes it near impossible, in my view, to actually get a clear view. Dave, do you want to do some music or just jump in and say hello?
Yeah, cheers, John. John was talking about Syria, and I was reading up some stats today, John, and I'm going to go through some of them through the show.
Oh, please do.
But just for the first part before we go to a music break, when did the crisis in Syria start? The anti-government demonstrations began in March of 2011 as part of the Arab Spring. But the peaceful protests were quickly escalated after the government's violent crackdown and armed opposition groups began fighting back. By July 2011, army defectors had loosely organised the Free Syrian Army, and many civilian Syrians took up arms to join the opposition. Divisions between secular and religious fighters and between ethnic groups continue to complicate the politics of the conflict. Don't forget all the mercenaries put in there by the US and the UK. I think the CIA is in there as well. When we come back, John will be elaborating more.
All the rage, all the on Trax FM, Trax FM, Trax FM. Alarless, John asked me to play. Welcome to John Bounce All the Rage. As I said, we've been off for 3 weeks, holidays and stuff like that, and lots been happening. Lots of divisive stuff as well. Divisive mainstream media nonsense. I've seen good friends actually fall out over it, and it don't do it. It's divisive. The whole thing is to scare you. John, take it away.
Thanks, Dave. Just to point out that The band's name is the Alalas. That song was called Don't You Forget It, and it's from their first self-titled album. I know we're talking about very, very serious issues this evening, so I'm not being frivolous, but just to lighten the mood slightly, that's a really, really good album. They've done three albums now. They're all good, but the first one's the best. Okay, back to discussing bombing of Syria. Do I need to condemn the regime of Syria? That would be my first question. This is loaded, but a lot of people might think. There is no argument that this bastard Assad has been abusing Syria's human rights his whole career as president, just like his dad did. But there is really, that's really got nothing to do with the reasons why there's Western intervention right now. No Western nation or bloc has ever intervened in a country because they gave a toss about the population there. Again, this does not help us with our main question, which is the interest in getting involved in the Syrian civil war now. What is the interest, I should say? It is undesirable to play whataboutie, but there are some serious questions to be asked, such as why it is so important to tackle the potential murder of civilians by government forces in Syria and not address Saudi Arabia's actions using British weapons in Yemen, and why we are happy to continue our twisted relationship with them while masses of Houthis are bombed and starved to death. There is also Israel and their frequent murder and oppression of Palestinians in order to maintain their ethno-state, but we say very little on that too. Then we must ask why it takes chemical weapons to provoke an intervention when plenty of people have been murdered with other weaponry and this did not elicit a response from Western forces. I think those being attacked, machine gunned, had regular bombs dropped on them versus chemical attacks. I'm sorry, folks, I don't see the difference. Killing is killing. But back to the bombing raid that we discussed to begin with. Looking across the pond to see how this was played there, we can see some very telling aspects that give an idea of what is really going on here. I'll give you two examples. Samantha Power, a UN ambassador from 2013 to 2017, has always been one of the in-between crowd, denouncing failure to intervene against Assad while repeatedly having a picture taken with her good friend Henry Kissinger. On this event, she tweeted, quote, "I see the case for opposing US airstrikes in Syria. Trump is anti-Muslim, deceitful, trigger-happy, he lacks a Syria plan, and any seeming regard for international and domestic law. But please share views on what the US should do to deter chemical weapons massacres." Unquote. I could probably spend the rest of the show just talking about that tweet. let's move on. I don't wish to be frivolous, but sometimes you can't help but laugh at these people. Now, here's another one from Anne-Marie Slaughter. Oh, what an appropriate name. International lawyer, foreign policy analyst, political scientist and public commentator in the US. She wrote, quote, "I believe the US, UK and France did the right thing by striking Syria over chemical weapons. It will not stop the war, not save the Syrian people from many or of the other horrors. It is illegal under international law, but at least it draws a line somewhere and says enough." What the fuck, lady? Well, listeners, make up your own mind. Many of these Democrats are supposedly disgusted by Donald Trump in all ways, but they still support his and the Republicans' actions, from tax cuts for the rich to no real opposition to his Muslim travel ban. Among other things, they subscribe to the interventionist ideal that goes with neoliberalism. It's as simple as that, folks. This is part of what I believe is going on here, is this is about what is beneficial to the crumbling ideology of neoliberalism, which is why you're seeing interventions there. They wouldn't bother otherwise. You know, where is their benefit here? No one on this show is, I'm not questioning much of the bravery of some of the people involved in the Free Syrian Army, even though that's a debated concept, and I'm certainly not speaking in favour of Mr. Assad. But it's got to be said, he was a clever bastard. He knew what he was doing when this war broke out. And that may be the situation we have to accept. There are many commentators, and say people who are much more up on this situation than I am, who have pointed out that chances, if we're all honest about it, he's probably won this conflict. It is important to discuss, however, the liberal mentality that I just mentioned, because it also affects many elements of politics in this country, especially the dregs of New Labour who share the exact same views. And we may come back to them later on, Dave, when we talk about some other issues. Okay, shifting the date now, the 16th of April, after one particular military action, Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn sealed an emergency meeting, giving the British Parliament more democracy, which is what I thought you fuckers all wanted when we had Brexit in the first place, but there you go. The point of the meeting was for the Prime Minister to justify her actions in joining the US. The usual House of Commons crap followed, including many Labour MPs showing their contempt not only for democracy, but for their own leader, but also the population of Syria and their self-righteous attitude towards bombing their country and keeping Britain on some kind of great country list. All Labour rebels on this issue have taken their stance to enhance their political position. Their ideology is to support war regardless of justification, while also undermining their party leadership because they hate it. Nothing more. They are conforming to the Samantha Power quote we just read out. If you cannot come up with an immediate answer against, we bomb. So I place this thing on the table, which is to say, here is a situation that I believe, never mind who I am, never mind how much power I possess, here is a situation as I believe and perceive it to be happening. If you can't come up with something against that, we go with my method. I mean, it's just repulsive to me that anyone would accept that kind of status quo. Anyway, back to the meeting that was held in the House of Commons. Prime Minister Theresa May showed nothing but contempt for any opposition to this action, with eye rolls and stony stares to those, such as when she was asked if she was just responding to Donald Trump's Twitter feed. A completely legitimate question, considering this is how he announced the attack. The US president commentates directly using this social media tool on domestic or international policy, if he actually has any, or whatever he happens to be watching on TV at the time. So, perfectly legitimate question. She got very uppity about the suggestion Britain was just following America, which again gives us more questions. If Britain isn't just following America, does that mean Britain has plans to bomb Syria independently? Britain would lead an invasion, would that happen? How far do the plans go? Ground invasion and or regime change? None of this seems to have been asked, unless I've missed it. I mean, I know a bit of time, we are speaking in July, and I'm talking about stuff that happened in April, but I've yet to see any commentators that have really asked these questions. This bombing took place because the American president ordered it to happen, and Britain and France followed his lead, and will do, no matter how bad a US president is. The neoliberal political consensus demands this. Their regime change in Libya has been an unmitigated disaster, with the country totally ungovernable and full of revenge-seeking extremists who have even opened slave markets. The emotionally manipulative arguments about children are an insult to them and other children around the world being attacked and abused all the time, such as those suffering attacks in Yemen, Palestinian children continually suffering imprisonment and murder by Israeli forces. If you want some details on that, I recommend the DCI Palestine Department. That's Detained Children Internationally, their Palestine Department, for more details. And there's an article from the 14th of May, actually, on that website, including the detail on the death of 10 Palestinian children in 4 weeks, and this is just within the geographic region that we are discussing. The appalling Jess Phillips MP is the lead on this, a self-righteous member of the Labour backbenchers who clearly hates the leadership and takes a role of the only one who cares for Syrian children, complete with conveniently placed tears that can be turned on magically when needed in this situation and others. And all of this brings me to something else I want to talk about before we have another music break, which is the Dubs Amendment. The Dubs Amendment was put forward by Labour Lord Alf Dubs, asking for 3,000 unaccompanied refugee children in camps around Europe to be allowed safe passage to the UK. It sought to challenge the government plan to exclude those already in Europe. It was voted down by 294 votes to 276, defeated because of the votes of Conservatives, although some of them did rebel, to be fair, the DUP and UKIP's then lone MP, who I think they've lost since then. For Labour, this was a full party vote in favour, from what I've found. All of them voted in favour, but this is odd to support benefiting refugees while also supporting creating more of them by bombing the place they are coming from, with, again, no full strategy for why and what comes next. So I would ask why Jess Phillips, Hilary Benn and Yvette Cooper, among others, take both sides on this. It seems a very odd position to me. Then, on the 6th of July 2018, the Organisation for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons published a report on the allegations of chemical weapon use in Douma. The following quote is from the report. The results show that no, pardon this pronunciation, folks, organophosphorus, make it up yourself. The results show that no nerve agent of this type or their degradation products were detected in the environmental samples or in the plasma samples taken from the alleged casualties. Along with explosive residues, various chlorinated organic chemicals were found in samples from two sites, for which there is a full chain of custody. unquote. Dave, I'm ready when you are.
Cheers, John. Before we get a music break, just to reiterate what John was, just facts and facts on the Syria war. So what is happening to Syrians caught in the war? The war has killed hundreds of thousands of people in the almost 7 years since it began. Crowded cities have been destroyed and horrific human rights violations are widespread. Basic necessities like food and medical care are sparse. The UN estimates that 6.1 million people are internally displaced. When you consider refugees, well over half the country's pre-war population of 22 million is in need of urgent humanitarian assistance, or whether they still remain in the country or have escaped across the borders. When we come back, we're going to get back into that on John Bowd's Order Age here on www.tracksfm.org.
John Bowd's All the Rage on Tracks FM.
Boy, you're pushing the broom. If you're trying to pull an ace, you get a punch in the face. All eyes are on my posse when we walk in the place. Not the Cunningham family from happy days. Not the boys who play the bench for the Oakland A's. He'll talk into a hop till the record he played. Couldn't keep it a secret, I'm LL Cool J. Rhymes are all wax and real or real. Yo, Earl, tell the party people a deal.
Yo, this thing ain't no thing. Can't complain, get cast like a motherfucker. Pass the J.
Right, I'm back. He talks I rap. You used to smirk, now you're jacking cause my name's on the map. Creators and bad, the creator on the fader, the teacher's pet, baddest man with 10 fingers you ever met, and sooner or later we'll house the set, cause creator cut the record so they don't forget. Get down,
go LL, go LL, go LL,
get down,
go LL, go LL, go LL,
I make hard rock jams for hard rock fans, what I'm saying's for real, this ain't La La Land, got a can full of jams pulling off the lid, competition in New York. I rocked at house parties, I was down with crews. Now I'll never be caught, I'm on my P's and Q's. And for the rest of your life, you wanna be in my shoes. I'm strong like stone, hard like cement. And I rocked every jam that I ever went. Cause I got a better rep than any MC had. And I'm bad like a brother from Alcatraz. Get down,
go LL, go LL, go LL.
Get down,
go LL, go LL.
Nick, Nick, nigga, Nick, 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 ninja. A rap, the boss is back, the only man. Should call him when the party is packed. From Paris to LA, they say I'm sharp as a pit. When it's a cool take party, you gotta get in. So I can make a kick step like Gladys Knight in the pit. One rhyme, you're on my tip soon as it leaves my lip. But the block kids are talking and spreading the news about the new grandmaster, the one you'll choose. Cause I'm treacherous, I wanna stomp the rest. When I'm kicking, couldn't bore, it can only impress. I'm not a hula hoop, this ain't no passing phase. Hard work pays, I'm getting straight up A's. Today is money, things I want it understood. Executioner, I should wear a black.
You can't beat a bit of LL Cool J. You listen to John Bowd's All the Rage here on www.tracksfm.org. John is continuing the discussion, or the facts, real facts, on the Syrian crisis. It's not a war, it's a crisis. Take it away, John.
Thank you. Well, we're going to talk about public opinion on this particular issue, which, just to remind any listeners joining us late, is the specifically about the bombing in April, led by the US and supported entirely by Britain and France, of Syria in regards a response to a chemical weapons attack. Public opinion. A YouGov poll taken right after this event found that although many Britons believed a chemical attack had taken place, only 22% supported a cruise missile attack against the Syrian military. Soon after, another poll found that even the frickin' Daily Mail readers were not in favour of it, which is saying something. On one side, there are also those of us who oppose war generally, and also because we are capable of assessing the situation and seeing that there is no benefit, particularly to the Syrian people, of more bombs, guns, and soldiers in their country. On the other side, and it pains me to say, there are people in Britain whose attitudes will be one more of vicious carelessness. Why should I care if any British or any British soldier put their life on the line for a bunch of Arabs? This view is abhorrent to me, but it should be addressed because, like any other racism, it will only grow if we ignore it. This is a kind of motivation that those not standing up for refugees or against furthering this war are aware of and respond to, whether they admit to it or not. Now, keep in mind regarding the quotes from Anne-Marie Slaughter and Samantha Power that I read earlier, and remembering other occasions, such as when Hillary Benn beat the drum for war against Syria back in December 2015, plus how terrible people like Trump get called very presidential when he does things like this. This is not about saving anyone's life or stopping the war. This is about a twisted sense of norms that are being violated and a need to stay relevant in the wider world that values this sick shit. There are still more people killed by weapons that are not chemical, by government forces and rebels, but that does not seem to be a problem. This is a line that can be crossed, as opposed to the supposedly uncrossable chemical weapon one. All of this, I believe, was a major factor in why the Prime Minister did not come to the House with this action for a vote or even a discussion before ordering the missile strikes. It is particularly offensive to think that because of the post-war neglect of Iraq and the virtual ignoring of Libya in the British media, that people are stupid when it comes to foreign policy. People are less stupid than they are careless. We need to put some responsibility on them. Coming to Russia. I hated Vladimir Putin before it was popular, but it has to be asked, what do we think will happen if Russian soldiers are killed in any of this? Are we really willing to risk this for what is effectively, as Chapo put it, a ceremonial action in bombing Syria? As pointed out by Stop the War Coalition in UK in an email dated the 16th of the 4th, 2018, these airstrikes were carried out without any parliamentary authorisation, the first time this has happened since 2003. Stop the War simply see this as a face-saving action for Trump, May and Macron in their demand that something must be done in retaliation for chemical attacks that we still do not know the full responsibility for, if at all they were actual full-on chemical attacks. I'm not into conspiracy theories, folks, all right, and I need to stop calling you folks, it's very irritating. I'm not into conspiracy theories, I hate all that shit. I'm not into making easy comparisons between this and the Spanish Civil War. I'm as obsessed with the Spanish Civil War as any good leftist. On the other hand, unlike many of my supposed comrades, I'm not actually interested in refighting it to this day. It's history. To kind of make those parallels is very insulting to everybody involved. It's not that simple. This is a case. My point, if you want to take a point from where I'm coming from this evening, it's that I believe more military action, any military action, is not going to solve this problem. There is no such thing as a military solution. That is my point. Anyway, where was I? I was talking about Russia. This was what happened here. The response to all of this by Trump, May and Macron was a low-risk response for these leaders, as it would not piss off Russia too much if their infrastructure was not hit. It's the latest in a long line of interventions that do nothing to help people in the Middle East. It just makes everyone more belligerent and may lead to further competitive attacks in future between the great powers. US Defense Secretary of that point, Jim Mattis, has even said that bombing risks escalating the war and pushes for more evidence. Well, if a man named Mad Dog by the Iraqis thinks we need more evidence before we push a war, then that should probably tell you something. It's unavoidable that all players in this conflict outside of Syria have very specific political reasons for being there, and these are unavoidable when trying to assess what to do going forward. Okay, I'm ready to conclude this section. I'll just read you my next points and then Dave and myself can discuss this. As I pointed out a moment ago, I remain against military intervention in other countries. This situation is incoherent. The government has no plan, but is merely looking for a distraction to their domestic woes, which, oh my God, have got worse since this event happened, plus a way to chase the American tail. And this is yet more proof that it does not matter who is in power in America. British government, along with many other European countries, will always jump when they are told to. They are strong believers in intervention. This is another reason why, from my perspective, they cannot be trusted. The Labour MPs, not behind their leadership and international law on this, need to stand down and leave the party. Go to the Conservatives or the Lib Dems, as you are better suited to their political beliefs. Right now, you are undermining the Labour Party for nothing but personal grievance. It will not even get you anywhere in the long term. Most of us who are in the Labour Party support Jeremy Corbyn. We like him as our leader. We want him to stay that way. If you don't like that, we don't care. I don't care. The climate we live in politically is creating a personal grievance industry that gives us bullshit like the Iraq era with us or against us narrative. Meaning if we do not condemn Assad around the clock and support Syrian bombing, we are all Russian cucks who love dictatorship. And indeed, you cannot argue with this because there is no argument. It's just abuse because the abuser has no answer. On the plus side, much of this media rhetoric is failing because people have had enough of the constant stream of abusive opinion that does not amount to a coherent narrative. Plus, some have had enough armed adventures in the Middle East that produce nothing good. Libya's collapse into failed government and human rights abuses is a crime never answered for by the perpetrators, specifically ex-Prime Minister David Cameron. As Mr. Corbyn said in the House, these are issues of life and death. We end this section of the show with the very same question that we began with, still unanswered. Why is Britain and America getting involved in Syria now? I think we all know why, but not because our elected representatives have told us, and this is a sorry example of democracy where ending life takes priority over saving it time and again. These political games will do nothing for the people of Syria. I do not take an anti-interventionist view on this because I support Assad in any way. I take it because there is no military solution to this conflict. And people in our military-worshipping society need to grow up and face that. I believe that helping the Syrian people involve letting in a bigger amount of refugees for a start and not requiring them to meet some sort of test or pass an exam in order to get here. Asylum is an international law. People have a right to it. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in next week's show too when we talk about ICE. We can then stop interfering in the region and selling arms to various sides there and everywhere else too. So there's two things we can do. So that's my two suggestions. Stop selling arms, shut down the arms industry, and start letting in more refugees. These missile strikes are an elitist ritual by people who want to show that they are in charge. The argument here should not be bombing or give me a better idea. It should be what good bombing and further involvement will actually achieve, then producing it or stopping. Assad is going nowhere and can continue killing however many he likes, which has been done here. What has been done here, sorry, does absolutely nothing to prevent this from happening. Further action, such as ground invasion, will not make any of this better. With all of this in play, any escalation in the involvement could be disastrous and bring in bigger forces like Russia. Again, none of this will be to the benefit of the Syrian people. Military solutions do not exist, folks, only humanitarian ones. Now, before we discuss this, quick recommendation. Lots of information on the Stop the War site. Chapo Trap House, episodes 202 and 203. Robert Fisk. May I also give a shout out to Brothers of the Gun, which is a book by Syrian journalist Marwan Hishem and Molly Crabapple, the great artist, which, among other things, discusses class differences in the country and what it has been like to survive life under Daesh and government and international attack. Paul Mason did an article in the New Statesman on international law on the 18th of April. That's worth reading. An article in the Institute for the Study of War by Elizabeth Obeghi on the Free Syrian Army. And that does me for that one. Dave, over to you.
I think people should start from the beginning. There's an interesting documentary, or documentee, as I say, in Bow Selector. about Vietnam, and I found I've watched most of it, but I had to take a break because it's quite disturbing. I'm not a massive fan of fatalities or casualties of war, but if you hear the secret recordings of Lyndon B. Johnson and the political mess that they just, there was no exit strategy, and that war was lost. And if we keep going in history, the Afghanistan war or takeover or whatever, the attack or whatever, lost Iraq, they will lose Syria. They will, and it doesn't get advertised. It's failed. We haven't learned anything from Vietnam. We haven't learned anything. And really, it's a good documentary because there are some recorded conversations, certainly with Lyndon B. Johnson, who wasn't the smartest president. I mean, he was the most normal president, normal person. And if you hear him, he's the most normal person. So I don't think we learn anything, John, from Vietnam. I really don't. And if you watch a documentary called, not a film, a film called Oliver Stone's JFK, and it was dramatised, but it was three things they put forward to the investigating lawyer who investigated JFK, and it was three things: who gave the order, who pulled the trigger, and who stood to gain. And I think those three things are really relevant in these conflicts. And it's disgusting that we allow these fatalities. And we're not talking, it's hundreds of thousands of people. And the New York Times in April 2018, American-led forces have bombed the Islamic State in large patches of eastern Syria in strikes believed to have left thousands dead, listen to what I'm saying, and dozens of armed groups including fighters backed by Iran have continued to clash, creating a humanitarian catastrophe that the world is struggling to measure. This is the 21st century. Remember, who gives the order, who pulls the trigger, and who stands to gain. John, take it away.
Yeah, I agree that those are important questions. You know, I suppose it's part of what tonight's show is about. I also think that as I said in my questions, you know, it's never really been answered as to what your long-term gain is here. And, you know, again, you know, okay, what's to add to what I said at the end there, what do I think would be a good thing that we could do? Well, for starters, many of these countries' worst regimes, Syria included, are often in the position because the international community, as people like to call it, which includes Britain, have supported them, have not had a problem with the things that they've done. They did it with Saddam, they did it with Pinochet, they did it with many, many other people. And then when it all goes to pot, when there is these kind of rebellions that kick off, such as those that happened during the spring, those are the people who we should support. We should have been supporting in the first place. And you could have perhaps been in a position where there wasn't a war to begin with. We need to stop propping these people up. So think about this, among other people, in relation to Saudi Arabia. Any rebellion groups in Saudi Arabia, any people pushing for better rights over there, including for women or including for people of the LGBT variety who are under threat of death, including for people who are found to be, you know, Jewish and worshipping their actual religion, even though Mohammed bin Salman claims himself to be a supporter of Israel. Well, he would be, because he's an anti-Semite and he wants to shift all the Jewish people there. That's not really support. You know, stop supporting them. Start supporting the people who are doing everyday actions, everyday work to stand up against this kind of stuff. If you want to see less of these kind of actions, even if you're one of these people in this country who doesn't give two shits about anyone if they come from the wrong country or they're a different colour to you, but you care about the troops, core blimey, care about the troops, well then stop creating situations where they go to kill and die. You know, if you have, give them some real, but don't just fly your stupid flag out your window and put your sticker on your car. Go and actually prevent them from being put into these terrible situations. Yeah, put your money where your mouth is. That's what we need to do. There needs to be more kind of all those, you know, those snotty lefty things that a lot of people don't like doing, these little groups for the peaceful democratic liberation of this place or the other. Well, they often are far better people to be involved with than a government like Assad's, who, as I say, there's nothing new here. The bloke's just doing the same image as his dad. He was a mass killer as well. So you're not really achieving anything here. This issue has taken us a long while to get on the air, and I apologise for that. But you know, you understand, these shows are written in my spare time, of which I don't have enough of. So they come up in different orders. But I hope you get the general message that I'm here to put across. I am anti-interventionist in general. There may be situations where intervention is warranted, but I would need a lot of evidence to support that myself. But I'm not interested in any of the extremist empire-like rhetoric of the right, who just want to put these foreigners in their place and make sure Britain still appears on a great big countries list. And I'm not interested in the factionalism of the left, who often just want to denounce each other, because it's kind of a hobby on the left denouncing each other anyway, and to draw, as I say, cheap parallels between this and other events. There is no military solution to being in Syria, absolutely none. And if you want to launch less chemical weapons, stop manufacturing and selling the fucking things. How's that for an idea? Start retraining people who work in weapons manufacturing in this country to do a decent job. And also, you know, I'm not really one for condemning any members of my own class, but fucking shame on you if you work in that industry. You know what you're doing. Don't come to moral, any kind of moral high ground with me. You produce weapons. You produce articles of murder. They're not used for anything else. You know, if someone gets stabbed with a kitchen knife, you can say, well, okay, but the knife wasn't designed. It was designed for cutting tomatoes. What's a fucking machine gun designed for? What's a bomb designed for? There's nothing else you can use it for. You know what you're doing. You know it when you manufacture missiles. Anyway, sorry, Dave. You come back in, and we'll get onto the thing you wanted to talk about.
No, it's just you look at the which is not being advertised at all. I think it's a terrible. I really don't like looking at it, but I do have to. The situation in Yemen. And yeah. Britain's place in that conflict—it's not conflict, actually. It's not a conflict. It's us funding the Saudis to blow up another country, and the mainstream media. And look, when you mention Yemen, you know, it just sounds like you're causing trouble. It's not. It's not just Syria. It's Yemen, and because Britain gains over £11 billion in selling arms to Saudi Arabia, and remember, Saudi Arabia is the biggest criminal of human rights. We are affiliated to that country. Bear in mind, forget your Brexits and your far rights and your Tommy Robinsons and all this rubbish. We are affiliated to that country. They put food on your table. Okay, and you should be grateful, but no one reports that. And then we talk, and it's a little bit like George Galloway. I love George Galloway, because George Galloway will say what the media do, but they'll look at everything that's happening wrong here, and George Galloway says the press go, but no, but forget all that, look over there, look what's happening over there.
Well, also, could I just say, Dave, Saudi Arabia, the biggest exporter along with Pakistan of Wahhabism, which all of the Islamophobes in this country are always trying to associate with some kind of mainstream Islam. Okay, so if you're supporting Saudi, you're supporting terrorism.
I was in the car today, and I'm Ian Dell from LBC, the one who wrote a great book about, not a great book, he says it's a great book about Margaret Thatcher. Listen, don't do that. And I'm going to say why I say don't do that. There's this mess. We haven't got a government. There's no government in power in this country, and it's a mess, right? By people who want career politics, it's a mess, right? Don't bring up anti-Semitism in the Labour Party just to go, look over there, forget all this mess, look over there, look what's happening over there. It's a disgrace. It's racism in all three parties. Don't do that, Mr. Down. If you're listening to this podcast, shame on you. Yeah. There's racism, and I say racism, it's not anti-Semitism. I disagree with Israeli politics. I disagree with Indian politics. I disagree with West Indian politics. It doesn't make me a racist. Okay? Don't do that. The party that you support, for whatever reason, sir, because they pay your wage probably, sue me if you want. Don't do that. Don't do that. John?
Yeah, I just want to add a couple. Firstly, Trax FM beefing with LBC. Yes, come on. Come and get some. I'll meet you. Only your presenters, definitely Nigel Farage. I'll meet you in a car park somewhere, you little bitch, anytime. I'm more than happy to do that. Anti-Semitism is a very specific form of racism and intolerance, and we absolutely need to deal with that. There is no doubt about that. But speaking as a supporter of Palestinian rights, you get accused of it all the time, and I have no problem saying that I am not with Zionist ideology. I don't support that, but any Jewish person being attacked is it must be that attack must be repelled in many ways. I just want to add something in our closing moments. For those of you that heard the interview we did with Pamela Fitzpatrick from the Harrow Law Centre, and if you didn't, please go back to the page and listen to it. It was great. You will know that the Harrow Law Centre, like all law centres in Britain, do very important work, but often under very difficult economic circumstances, which is why they require frequent fundraisers. In September, there will be the second and the recently reactivated Harrow Half Marathons, and I will be running this as a fundraiser for the Law Centre. The page will be up soon, and All the Rage will provide details on how you can find it as soon as that page goes up in future shows. Claudia Talbot-Doloff, who we also interviewed for a couple of other episodes, she mentioned a petition on the mental health episode. That is now at over 11,000 signatures, and this petition is asking specifically for the, it's at change.org, by the way, asking for government to provide relief from excruciating waiting lists for those waiting for mental health provisions on the NHS. It is also supported by the British Association of Psychotherapists, the largest membership body of its kind in this country, and also the British Association of Counsellors and Psychologists. They're also supporting it, so get involved in that if you haven't signed it yet. It's at change.org, as I said. Also, her other role with United Voices of the World Trade Union, update on some of their actions. Cleaners in Kensington and Chelsea are discussing striking for a living wage in the council buildings where they work. This could take place at Kensington and Chelsea Council. I've heard about them somewhere before. This could take place this month, and UVW are involved in representations with AMEY, that's AMEY, the outsourced company employed by Kensington and Chelsea Council to do the cleaning. There are also similar campaigns going on with UVW at the Ministry of Justice and HCA Healthcare. See the United Voices of the World website for more details, which is uvwunion.org.uk. Right, that's all of my planned stuff for the week, Dave. Closing moments. We could have another song, or we could...
Yeah, I just before we go, John, and I was listening to Claudia's interview, and I don't know if I... And it's really brave. Put aside everything what people think, okay, about people coming to this country and taking our jobs, knock it on the head, do the lambada. Forget all that. I think it's really brave that someone like Claudia comes to this country, puts up with all that racism and sexual harassment, and comes here, learns the language, builds something for her family, and then takes up the option to protest against inhumane things that are happening in this country. Just to that industry, that I think people who come to abroad, wherever they are, and to do that, not just to work, I think that's very brave, to come and just get a job and, you know, your job, agree. But to come and do what she does, and which goes way and beyond, I think it's weird. Think about what I'm... If you're listening to this and you may think, what an idiot, think about what people like that do. They go way up and over and beyond. I think it's brave, John. I think it's very brave.
I agree, and in my experience, anyone who criticises people like that has never been through half the shit that they've actually been through. It's a cowardly position to take. Also, to point out on United Voices of the World, you know, what they're doing is specifically organising migrant communities in particular sectors like cleaning and stuff, often people who don't speak English, in order to campaign better for their rights and to get paid properly. And I've got to say, as a committed trade unionist within the mainstream trade union movement, I think they're doing something we failed to do. I think that they're doing the job that we should have done.
And that's what I mean. Now, sometimes I was listening to it, and I had to edit it and stuff, and you get to listen to it, and I don't know if I could do that, if I could go abroad and continue what I do here. As me and John, I represent people. We're volunteers, you know, we don't get paid for it. And listening to her, she's got so much to say, enough to learn the language and represent people who aren't represented. And she's in a foreign country, and it's different. And I'm a snowflake. I just think that's extremely brave. Regardless of what you think, don't you think that's quite a brave thing to do, listeners?
I agree. We love Claudia here, and she's going to get more time on this show in the future. So, Excellent. A shout out to Pamela too.
Yes, Pamela. Yeah, I sent you that letter from Bob Blackman about the closure of those delivery offices. Yes. thank you very much, John. We'll be chatting next week. Coming up next, it's some idiot called David R.B.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.